And we are broadcasting live from St. Thomas Sports Park at Titans Camp. Day two of joint practices between the Titans and Bucks. Nick Hale, Braden Gall, Chase McCabe with you. Derek Mason's got the stomach bug. He's at home this morning. So get better, D-Mace. Hopefully we will see you back tomorrow morning. Big 8 o'clock hour coming up. We got Teron Davenport, who covers the Titans for ESPN, as well as Stick to Sports. But we just got done with Jayon Brown. We'll get back to some Titans conversation in a little bit. But a interesting question as we kind of delve into the world of college football, Braden Gall. What can we all learn from one of, if not the most, bizarre press conference ever?
Yeah, so I think one of the most bizarre press conferences I think I've ever seen, and I think probably bizarre in a good way, was a university president, Wallace Lowe of Maryland. And if you don't know the story, a young man passed away tragically because they sort of missed. They did a lot of things. They didn't do a lot of things they should have done to help protect this player's health and safety at a high temperature. Passed away from a heat stroke, and it's just a tragic thing. But I think we can learn something. There's a lot we can learn. Frankly, I think the NCAA needs to get involved with creating protocols, because this is the same issue. The issue with Ohio State and Urban Meyer is now about protocol, right? Like, oh, I followed proper protocol. Well, if that's the case at Ohio State, then Ohio State needs different protocols, just like Maryland didn't follow the protocol. So it's time, I think, that the NCAA gets involved in creating some legislation that forces, at the very minimum, medical protocols. Because here's the deal. We're very concerned about concussions, right? Concussions and head injuries are a huge part of young players, youth football. We're very worried about it. Doesn't it feel like every single year or every 2 years someone's passing out and then dying? A young student athlete is dying because of heat exhaustion or over a UCF, or like it seems like it's happening way too many times. Like, dozens of players in the last 10 or 15 years have died because of this type of stuff. Not, they're all very different. One I think was a sickle cell issue in the Pac-12, or somebody passed away, and it's all tragic, but there are medical things we can put in place. So that's one part of this. The NCAA, I think, needs to get involved in this and start putting protocols in place for, especially at minimum, medical issues. But what I thought was interesting, and it's unlike anything I've ever seen before in almost any press conference, especially in college athletics, and to be honest with you, refreshing, is that the president of a university stepped up to a podium and accepted moral and legal responsibility. And that is, first of all, something you never see.
Right.
All you hear from Ohio State and from these other Baylor and Penn State and Arkansas with Bobby Petrino, again, far all these crimes are very different. All these issues are very different. I'm not trying to compare any of them. But what do you see? You see people lawyering up. You see people prepared statements. You see people try to skirt the issue, try to dance around a topic and never accept responsibility.
Yep.
And what Maryland did, I think, for all of their flaws and faults and issues, I think the one thing that I will commend them for, and this sort of goes to how Vanderbilt handled the sexual assault case, where they suspended the players immediately. They did an internal investigation. They handled everything appropriately. Their protocols worked, right, for Vanderbilt. I think with this, to see a president of a university step up and say, we accept legal responsibility. I mean, just think about what that could mean down the road. Like in a civil suit?
Oh, money.
Millions and millions of dollars.
Yep.
And he could easily lose his job
sure.
for this. And frankly, I applaud someone, or maybe not applaud, I respect someone who has the moral intestinal fortitude to step up and say, this was a tragedy, we failed, it is my fault, and be willing to put their own job on the line, because you do not see that anymore.
And not issue a hollow statement.
Right, yeah, where you're
put something behind
where
it.
Your lawyer probably wrote it for you,
yeah.
And you're trying to like dance around it to protect yourself. Like, no,
yep.
If you did something wrong, just say, because here's what's sort of great about this country, and nothing will ever change this family's loss, and it's tragic, and nothing will ever bring a son back to their family. It's awful. I can't, like, it makes me sick. But what we do in this country very well is that if you are genuinely remorseful, you acknowledge that you did something wrong, it may cost you your job, but we are faster and quicker to forgive and say, all right, like Wallace Lowe didn't specifically, the president, have anything to do with the medical staff that's now been fired at Maryland for not attending to a person. Like, My daughter had a femoral seizure at like 6 months old. I know exactly what to do when her temperature goes up. Like, I know what I'm supposed to do. Turn her on her side, cold compress, all these things, right? Mm-hmm. Like, the medical staff at Maryland failed this young man and this family. They didn't do it right. It wasn't the president. But the president stepped up and said, we accept responsibility for this. And I can't remember the last time a major university, for any of these problems, did something like what I saw Maryland do this week. So it's not worthy of praise because it's just the right thing to do.
It's the common sense thing to do, but it's lacking in college football. You don't see it enough.
And it's like pro sports are like unapologetically business oriented, right? Like they don't have to. There's not like a it doesn't seem like there's like a moral thing in the NFL. Like if you're a great player, like you're just going to get a job. Like, it's just sort of the way it is. But the NFL is sort of unapologetic about that, and it's above board. Mm-hmm. What I don't like about college athletics in general is that a large part of this is stemming from the expose that's been written about DJ Durkin and the coaching staff and how they created an abusive culture. Tim Beckman at Illinois got fired because players were being mistreated medically. And this is why people have an issue with what – this is why I have an issue with what Jeremy Pruitt has done at Tennessee when it comes to the medical staff. I'm not saying he's going to do anything wrong. I don't know that he's doing anything wrong at all. What I don't like is any coach of any university getting involved in the health and safety of their players. It's why supposedly in the NFL you're supposed to have independent doctors. Well, we all know those doctors are sort of beholden to the NFL team because guess what's good for your practice? Being the representative of an NFL team, right? So, like, if you don't – so there's conflicts of interest involved when football coaches and medical personnel get intertwined, when they start overlapping, and that's why people
– Well, it's about staying in your lane. Like, you're not
exactly
qualified to diagnose or say suck it up or any of that other stuff.
And that is why I think people were not alarmed, not, like, angry, but the antenna went up a little bit when Jeremy Pruitt got rid of all these longtime medical professionals that have been with Tennessee forever. There was sort of some, like, for me, that's an antenna going up, going, well, why don't you probably, it's never a good thing when you start meddling in the medical world of your players. It's, you can care about them, you want to be involved with them, but it just never is good. You need to leave that to the professionals. And in Maryland's case, the professionals failed. They didn't handle it correctly, and they need to be better. And I have respect for a couple of people at the top of the Maryland food chain that are accepting moral and legal responsibility. Those are his quotes for a tragedy that took place on their campus.
And how do you view, because you mentioned about the medical staff failing and then obviously the president stepping up and kind of taking ownership for it. But how do you feel about Durkin with the whole situation?
So that's the different. That's unique because how much, and this speaks to all coaches in college football in particular, and it speaks to what we're going to get to when we come back, which is why in college sports do we continually have these issues at Baylor, at Penn State, with the Tallahassee Police Department and Jimbo Fisher and Jameis Winston, with North Carolina's academics, with, you know, just any of this stuff, Ohio State with Urban Meyer, the insulation and the covert corruption that takes place behind closed doors, it's just like you create an environment that's ripe for those bad things to happen, and it only happens in college athletics. It doesn't happen in the pros. It only happens in college, and by all accounts, Heather Dinich has done a fantastic job reporting on this. She's a former Maryland beat writer who now covers the college football playoff for ESPN. She knows all the inner workings of Maryland, and she's done a great job reporting on this, saying it was excessively abusive culture that DJ Durkin created. I don't think DJ Durkin survives this at all. I don't think there's a chance he survives this. I don't think you can bring him back. Also, when you win 4 or 5 games a year, it's really easy to fire a coach.
Yeah.
So they're trying to figure out a way to fire him without pay. That's the difference between Urban Meyer and DJ Durkin. Again, I'm not comparing the crimes or whatever here. I'm just saying one guy wins 65-7 every Saturday, and the other guy wins 4 games a year. That's why it's going to be easier to fire a guy. That's just the nature of reality. But I think there is – I do have a theory. There's one thing I think that we could do with college athletics, and it's good for the fans. It's good for the players. I don't think it hurts the coaching staff or the schools at all. And it's one really simple, easy thing we could do, and it would solve a lot of these problems. And I don't know why we don't do it. The NFL does it. I don't know why college doesn't do it. I'll explain my theory when we come back, but we have these insulated cultures of abusive sort of corruption, and the environment is ripe for that to grow. And we see it time and time again all across America. It's not unique to one school or program. It's a college sports problem that we need to fix.
We'll get into that when we come back, but I just saw a major jersey violation. I mean,
way to lighten the mood.
For the sake of a commercial break, because we have to get the break, I'm going to go to break, but I've got to address this. This is a staggering development. Stay tuned. It's Morning Drive. Nick, Braden, and Chase, ESPN 102.5 The Game. Welcome back into Morning Drive, ESPN 102.5 The Game. Nick, Braden, and Chase, we're out at St. Thomas Sports Park, Titans camp today as the Titans and Bucks, day number two of an inter-squad practice, but college football and the ongoing culture issue.
So, obviously, Maryland, the long expose, go read about it, the long expose of the culture of abusive behavior by the coaching staff with their players, and I'm not talking, some of it's physically abusive, but certainly in the wake of a player dying and everything, it's something that's extremely important that we need to take very seriously and look into. But here's the thing. This isn't the cause of all of these issues, but it is a symptom, if that makes sense.
Okay.
And it's one small thing I think college football could do. I think it would be a better marketing tool for the game. I think fans would be more interested in their own teams, frankly. But we're sitting here at Titans camp.
Yep.
And they literally will let anyone with a cell phone come out here. Buck Rising gets to come out here every day and watch practice.
Which is astounding in its own right.
They will let anybody come out here. They let you and me come out here and watch practice. Is Mike Vrabel worried about us in camp? I'm not talking about during the season and during games. But is Mike Vrabel worried about what's going to be shown on Twitter or said on social media or written in an article? Do you think that the Titans have some disadvantage because their practices are open to the public?
No.
Here's the thing. What allows for a crazy, abusive culture like what's happening at Maryland take place, some part of this, the fact that not a single major college football practice training camp is open to the media or to the public. There is no reason for Tennessee's practice to be closed and for no Tennessee fan to know what really is going on between Jarrett Garantano. We know Luke Falk sucks here at Titans camp because the media is allowed to watch that. Do you think that helps or hurts the Titans moving forward to win football games? No. It has no impact. USC under Pete Carroll famously had wide open practices. Do you think it affected their ability to win? No, it didn't. So why college practices are closed is a simple, simple thing. It's powerful coaches feeling the need to control everything. And if you let practice be open, because nobody, first of all, fans don't get any information about their favorite teams. If you want to know who's winning the quarterback battle at LSU between Miles Brennan and Joe Burrow, you have no idea. Unless some insider source talks to the quarterback's coach and gets some information. Like no one, you don't get to watch them play. You don't know what Tennessee's quarterback battle looks like. You just go on what Jeremy Pruitt says to people. And what it allows for is it closes off everything. And if you have transparency, it reduces the risk of what happens at Maryland, right? Like, if you are allowed to see practice, you're not gonna allow for these corruptive sort of bad behavior to take place. And frankly, it's better for your sport. It's better for your fans. It's better for the media. Everybody gets more enjoyment out of it. I just don't understand. It's not high school. High school football practices aren't closed. NFL football practices aren't closed. Like, the only football practices that are closed off are major Power 5 college football training camp practices.
So you think it's because they want to control the narrative and really suppress all the information?
They don't let their players talk to the media. They don't let their assistant coaches talk to the media. They don't even let fans watch practice. What is it that's going on at Tennessee or LSU or Alabama or Clemson or Ohio State or anywhere else that is going to, like, change the outcome of the season if a bunch of kids got to go watch Tennessee practice today? Like, are they going to really do something in that practice that, like, I'm not talking about a Wednesday of a game week. Like, you don't open that up. That's where you're putting in a game plan, and we're gonna run these plays against this Florida defense. That shouldn't be open. I understand that. And Chris Lowe has a super famous historic line when Chris Lowe from ESPN was covering Tennessee's beat. They were telling him that he was gonna be, hey Chris, we're gonna close practice, and Chris Lowe goes, well, good, that gives me 3 hours a day extra to go work on digging up dirt for your program. And practice wasn't closed after that. So, again, when you insulate and close off and reduce transparency, it creates an environment that is ripe for corruption. And we are seeing too much of it in college sports. I'm not saying that opening practice solves these problems. It doesn't. But it's a symptom, right? When we have this cultural problem at Maryland or the abusive behavior of Tim Beckman at Illinois, or, you know, George O'Leary's treatment of his players at UCF. We see this all the time, and it comes out, and we're like, we're blown away by how these coaches are dealing with their players, and we're like, well, if practice was open, I bet you we would know about it, and it wouldn't happen. So on top of it, oh, by the way, it's fun for the fans. Like, wouldn't it be cool if you're a fan to see Keller Christ and Jarrett Garantano throwing passes? Is it going to hurt Tennessee football if we saw that right now?
No.
No, it's not going to change anything. No. I don't know why they. I don't know why coaches feel the need to do it, and college football needs to be brought into the 21st century with this.
Because coaches have been given too much control.
Exactly.
That's the problem.
Nailed it. They have too much power, and we see it corrupt.
Well, these college coaches have more power than NFL coaches.
100%.
I mean,
100%. When you're the most powerful employee in the state, like Urban Meyer is, the highest paid employee in the state, you are a godlike figure in these communities, especially when you go small towns, right?
Yep.
Like if Chad Morris wins an SEC championship at Arkansas, like, you don't think Chad Morris is going to – like, Chad Morris could do whatever he wants in Fayetteville. I'm not saying he will. I think Chad Morris is a pretty good guy. But this ability to sort of have – and their minds get warped. Like Urban Meyer is wrapped up in his own ego. It's I can do whatever I want because I'm Urban Meyer. Because I win by 65 points every Saturday. And guess what? People in Columbus are going to forgive him of anything that he does and forgive him of any wrongdoing in what he's done in this Courtney Smith, Zach Smith thing. And that'll be it. And he'll keep his job. He'll get suspended. And Ohio State fans won't care at all. Just like there's a whole cross-section of Baylor fans that was, why are we firing Art Briles? We love Art Briles. He won games. Just like Penn State. Just like Florida State. North Carolina. On and on and on and on down the list. And now at Maryland, you have a player who dies. And this is, there's a small, tiny step we could take that maybe, just maybe, could result in protecting from that sort of behavior. And if you allow practices to be open, it's possible that that cultural abusive stuff doesn't happen. And on top of that, oh, by the way, you have content for your fans to consume, which is called marketing.
Give us some content to talk about on the show. Yeah, the heck with the fans. I need content for this program.
Like, we can go out here and watch Marcus Mariota,
yep,
Blaine Gabbert, and Luke Falk throw every single day. Do you think that hurts the Titans' chances at winning football games?
No.
So why is it that it's exactly what Chase said? These college coaches have been given so much power that they just think they can do whatever they want. And even just a little bit, like, it's time for transparency. We need some transparency.
We've got Teron Davenport's going to join us coming up next segment to talk about the Titans. But speaking
always
of,
transparent,
yes, and
Mr.
speaking
Davenport,
of having power, fans have a lot
it's
of power.
Good, it's a compliment.
But there's something that bothers me. So going to the break, I saw a fan here, and God bless him. You can wear whatever you want. I'm just busting your chops. But when I see a Titans fan come in here wearing a number 85 jersey, and I see the front of it, I say, oh, all right, that's Derek Mason. And then he walks past, and I see the name on the back of the jersey, and it says Nate Washington. See, Teron, give me that face again. That face was great. You're like, you guys
don't know how important Nate Washington was to the national community.
A major violation to be walking around Titans camp wearing an 85 jersey that's not Derek Mason, and it's Nate Washington.
I mean, the guy played here for like six seasons, is the only other receiver, I believe, since Derek Mason and Drew Bennett to have 1,000 yards in a season.
So he did have 1,000.
I think you're overrating or you're underappreciating Nate Washington here.
I don't know.
Someone's got to stick up for Nate Washington.
I'm
going to stick up for
one.
Nate Washington.
Braden, I rarely agree with Braden, but I'm with him on this. So, yeah, I don't.
Dude really, had 74 catches for 1,000 yards and 7 touchdowns.
Stats can be a little misleading.
No, but
can manipulate
dudes
the numbers.
Caught 7,000 yards in his career in the NFL.
He was a pretty big part of this team.
I think there was a show on ESPN called Numbers Never Lie. I don't know if it's still on the air or not. So
he was here from 2009 to 2014. Certainly some bad teams. Not going to argue that. There were clearly some bad teams in there. I want to say that there were also a few good teams. He was on an 8-8 team, a 9-7 team. Okay, that was it.
All right. Coming up next, we'll talk with Teron Davenport, ESPN Titans reporter, who has just sat down. But don't forget, guys, Middle Tennessee State's athletic department is hosting its annual Fan Day on Sunday, August the 19th, inside of Floyd Stadium from 2 to 4. The event is free and open to the public, so stop on out. You can get more info at thegamenashville.com under the events tab. Teron Davenport next on Morning Drive on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Welcome back into Morning Drive, ESPN 102.5 The Game. Nick Hale, Braden Gall, Chase McCabe. We are live out at St. Thomas Sports Park. Titans camp today. The Titans and Bucks round two of practice before they get together Saturday at Nissan Stadium for the second game of the preseason. And joining us right now, Teron Davenport covers the Titans for ESPN. Teron, what's going on, man?
Oh, nothing much, man. You know, another day of football, so, you know, I can't help but smile, man. But before we start talking, the Nate Washington, Derek Mason thing, listen, no disrespect to Nate Washington, but putting a Washington name on the 85 is like, you know, you have Lexus and Toyota. You take the Toyota badge and you put that on a Lexus.
Same company, same brand, different quality.
So when you see the Acura logo on a Civic?
Different price.
Well, that's the reverse. You know, you see a Honda logo on an Acura and it's like, okay, the same. You know what I mean?
Right,
D. Mason's a legend here, man. I've already picked that up. Always loved his game.
But he's out this morning with a stomach flu, so I don't know if the legend really still applies.
It's a maintenance day.
Maintenance day. That's right. You know, you got to.
He's been ripping on the maintenance day. He's not a fan of the maintenance day. It's the old school player, right? And I get it. I understand why an old guard sort of looks at this new wave of players and says, man, they're not as tough as we were. I agree. But it's just a different. We know more about the human body. We've learned more about technology. But that leads us to Corey Davis, which is somebody we've talked about pretty much, I think, every day on the show. Since you got here in February. He's such a critical part of what this offense is going to look like. I have long thought he's going to be okay. Titans fans should wait until he gets into games and plays a full season before we start to cast judgment. But it does seem like, in your opinion, that he's starting to make waves. You're working on a big piece. So what have you seen from Corey Davis in camp so far? And are you optimistic about what he's going to be?
I would be very optimistic. And watching him, I see improvement. Just from, you know, watching his college film, I watched a little bit last year, but to see him actually every day, his releases are getting a lot better. He's doing a really good job of working on catching the football. After practice, he's there on the jugs machine, and he's catching, you know, I don't know how many, maybe 40 to 50 balls. That's remarkable. And when you watch him, just the confidence that he's starting to gain, the timing, especially yesterday, they're working the play action. Right, and you see him being moved across the formation. There was one play where they had him as the number three man inside, so it was trips left, actually. And there was Tajay Sharp was on the outside, Taywan Taylor was number two, and then he was number three, furthest closest to the tackle. And they ran play action. He ran a skinny post, and you talk about a ball being on the money. That thing was on the money. He turned his head. The ball was right there. He snapped it out the air, and he just kept running. And snapping it out the air and continuing to run is something that you really need to be able to do, especially in this offense where you're getting the yards after the catch, right? And that shows confidence catching the football, and that comes from continuously catching it and, you know, to be able to run through the catch. So that's something I've seen. Getting back to the releases, you see him freaking corners at the line of scrimmage, you know. A lot of times at Western Michigan, he was able to just use his size, just to body the corner up and get behind him. But here, the guys are just as fast as you. A lot of them are stronger. A lot of them are the same size. So you have to rely on other things. And that's what Rob Moore, a guy who had 50, he led the league in receiving yards in 97, 1,500 yards. And seeing a guy like that work with not only Corey Davis but the other guys, you're really
Taylor's
starting to
really
see the
come
result.
Along too.
Taylor also, and even Tajay. And I mean, you got to talk about Nick Williams. You know, White Chocolate, man. He's out there doing the thing, man. So it's good to see these receivers as a whole. They're growing, but Corey Davis especially.
How many are you keeping? How many do you think they are on the roster at the end of the day? Who are they?
Six, I would say, because you got the special teams with Nick Williams. But you got Corey Davis, Taywan, Tajay Sharp, Darius Jennings / Deontay Burnett, the guy called 7-11 because he's always open. You know, it's a toss-up. And, I mean, unfortunately, Mike Campanero continues to be hurt. It's tough. But I would say six guys, though.
You talk about receivers getting open yesterday. Let's flip it to the other side where Tampa Bay with Mike Evans, DeSean Jackson, both were able to get behind Malcolm Butler. Malcolm Butler's a guy we've talked a lot about this year on this show, from the amount of money he got paid in free agency to what happened with Belichick in the Super Bowl to actually having a really good camp for the most part. But yesterday, DeSean and Mike Evans were able to get past him. What do you make of that? Is that just simply a good player making a good player, a good play against another good player, or is there something more?
they call Mike Evans Debo for a reason, man. Like, that guy is – it's really – he's unguardable. You could always throw it up, and he'll go up and get it. A lot of people forget he was an outstanding basketball player in high school, and he uses all of that posting up, you know, going up and grabbing that rebound, so to speak. And that's what happens when you have that big body like that. So I'm going to, you know, kind of excuse that. I mean, obviously you're paying Malcolm Butler a lot of money. You don't want to see that happen, but it happens, you know, especially going against Mike Evans. Now, Deshaun, Nick, you know, from seeing him back in Philly, man.
Who can run with him?
I don't think anybody can.
He can still fly.
D-Jack got wheels.
Yep.
And, you know, when you get a guy like that, and he got behind Malcolm in one-on-ones. But, you know, let's face it, that's built for the receiver, for the offense. So you're going to see that happen. A lot of times, you know, because it's one-on-one and the focus is just on them and the guy gets beat, it gets magnified. But the few times that Deshaun beat him, a lot of times you're going to have that safety over top. So it's just, you know, it's give and take. But I would be concerned about a few things with Malcolm Butler. And the few things that I would be concerned about is you look at the Green Bay game, Devontae Adams, when he beat him deep, yeah, he got by him. But go back and look at the line of scrimmage, right? And you'll see him instantly winning his route. Just like that. The ball snap.
One step.
He gives him a move.
Is that a physicality thing at the line getting off of press, or is that like just a hip thing and a lateral movement thing?
It's a mixture of everything. Yeah. I actually have a piece that I posted this morning about Adoree Jackson. And he was talking about how, yeah, exactly. And he was talking about how, you know, patience and all that and, you know, being athletic comes into play. And that's something that it's a feel thing. And if you don't get a jam on a guy like a Deshaun Jackson right away, you're done, right? But even like Devontae Adams, you know, he was able to get him at the line. I saw Tajae Sharpe get him at the line last week. And then I saw Tajae Sharpe at the top of the route turn him around. And it's just like, okay, listen, we can't have that kind of thing happen. That, I mean, as a coach, that's what I would be saying. We can't have that kind of thing happen. If a guy runs by you, you know, just physically he's faster than, hey, look, you know what?
Right.
That's my bad for not having that coverage over top to help you. But if he beats you at the line of scrimmage, that's an issue. And that's something that we saw two or three times in the past couple weeks.
Well, and even the Devontae Adams play, he showed good closing speed. He closed on the ball at the end. It's proper technique. He gets the arm up. He turns and looks for the ball. But you got to make the play. Like, he just lost the football, and he couldn't find it at the end. And I guess if it was Aaron Rodgers, I'd say that's probably a touchdown. So, you know, that is clearly a concern. And D-Mace has been concerned about the deep ball against for Malcolm Butler for a long time. I think the collection of the secondary together, though, I'm not as worried about. There's another guy I am worried about, and it's Rashawn Evans. I think he's an extremely talented player. I love his game. I think he fits this defense great. Do you have any theories on what the heck's going on with Rashawn Evans, and how do you feel about the fact that you don't know anything about Rashawn Evans?
I know one thing. It's not heat-related, because the dude was out here the other weekend, a full-flown hoodie, you know, like an actual sweatshirt, and it was like 90 degrees, you know what I mean? So it's definitely not that. I don't think it's good that – no one knows anything that's going on with him. He was out here doing an upper body workout, so I'm going to assume, and this is an assumption, that it's lower body, I think hamstring, something along those lines.
Soft tissue.
It kills a lot of athletes, man.
Yes, it does.
But I'm going to assume it's that. We definitely should be able to at least have a you know, like Doug Peterson used to say, hey, look, it's a lower body injury. That's what he would say about Sidney Jones. It's a low – well, yeah, obviously.
It's a hockey thing.
He blew his Achilles out. I know it's a lower body injury. But still, at least you shared something, you know.
Law, this will be the last time we talk to you before the preseason game number 2 on Saturday night. How do you expect things to play out as far as the ones go, as far as snaps and series compared to last week?
They've been very secretive about that, you know, the players and the coaches. I think we're going to see at least two or three drives of on the offense, because they have to get that play calling thing going. I don't know if Coach LaFleur is going to go from the box as opposed to on the field like last week. But I think we'll see two or three plays, series rather. I think defensively we're going to see a couple series also. And I think you're going to see a lot of Harold Landry. It's time to show what he could do, and you saw the strip sack that he had last week, and he's someone, man.
He's got a different thing that around the edge. He's got a different thing.
Hey, I talked to him about that, and I remember last year, you know, with Derek Barnett, they used to call him Gumby because the dude could bend his body and run sideways, literally. And that's what you're seeing out of Harold Landry. This dude is really interesting as a pass rusher. Now, one of the things that we talked about was being able to stack moves on top of just that outside edge rush that he has, and he's doing that. I tell you what, if that dude could mix a spin move back inside, he's going to be freaking unstoppable, man. I'm excited. You know, I'm not a fan of the team. I'm a fan of football. So when I see a guy like this, it's exciting, man, and he's going to bring a lot this year.
Is he the guy? Because my question was going to be, you know, when you got here, you probably had some preconceived notions about players. What has been the most surprising thing to you, probably in the positive, of a player that you didn't anticipate seeing and now you really like him? And maybe it is Landry, and maybe that's who the answer is. But who are those guys or that guy for you where you got here and you had an expectation and now you're going, man, I'm thinking differently about him now?
Oh, that's a tough one. I've been really impressed with Jarrell Casey, honestly. Just the hard work that he puts in throughout practice and the work on the focus on technique. I mean, they're doing a lot of stuff with coach. I think it's Terrell Williams, the D-line coach. You know, they're working on just engaging in contact and turning the offensive lineman and shedding him and going and wrapping up. I really like some of the things that they're doing. I would probably say Vrabel. Well, the coaching staff as a whole is what has surprised me the most. The energy that they bring, right? And you look, Mike Vrabel goes from station to station to station and gets in there and gets involved. You know,
he'll hold the tackling dummy and work on pass blocking drills.
Not only that, he'll beat the tackling dummy. You know, he was letting the inside linebackers wrap him up, the other day. Then you see him engaging with Taylor Lewan, you know, on pass pro situations. And then you see him mixing it up with Derek Morgan and Harold Landry working on stunts. And just the knowledge that he's imparting on these guys is awesome. Coach Kerry Coombs, man, fire. You know, that's the one word
He has one speed, man.
One speed, full speed, you know. And then even Pat O'Hara and Matt LaFleur, the stuff that they're doing with working on quick decisions with Mariota and all the quarterbacks. You know, you see them moving from side to side, and he'll clap real quick and point one way, and they got to throw the ball. It's working on quick decisions. And you know, it's this coaching staff, I've been pleasantly surprised with them. They're outstanding.
You talk about the quick decisions. Hopefully you can get the thought process, the mentality, and the psyche on whether or not that fan wearing a Nate Washington jersey was a quick decision or not. We're going to need some if you get quotes.
Ooh, you guys are out of town.
You can report back to
no
us.
No respect for Nate Washington.
Man, no, it's not no respect for Nate Washington. It's not enough respect for Derek Mason.
Fair enough. I'll get on board with that.
All right, good stuff, Teron
Davenport.
Covers the Titans for ESPN. When we come back, it is Stick to Sports time, but I got to tell you about my friends at Hermitage Golf Course, the number one daily fee course in the state of Tennessee, and it's not even close. Number one rated public course according to Golf Digest, PGA.com, and ESPN, the magazine. The tradition of golf excellence began in 1986, and it continues 32 years later with rolling stretches of scenic terrain laid out along the Cumberland River. It's as close to golf perfection as you will find, and it's more than just golf. It's weddings, it's cottages for stay and play packages, corporate outings, and an unbelievable food and beverage service that will leave you coming back for more. Hermitage Golf Course, so perfect, it might as well be private. Welcome back into Morning Drive, ESPN 102.5 The Game. Nick Braden, D. Mace out today. Chase McCabe, we are live at Titans Camp, St. Thomas Sports Park. Lots to get to in the final hour, including getting back to the Ronald Acuna discussion and if baseball purists are the worst form of fans. Stay tuned for that. But right now, Chase McCabe, we have to stick to sports.
Let's see how smart the guys really are. No funny business. Stick to sports now on Morning Drive.
And it's brought to you by Decorating Den Interiors. Stick with the pros when you are ready to upgrade your home, office, or outdoor space. Request a complimentary appointment online, decoratingden.com. Chase is so excited for this segment, he was promoting it on Twitter, teasing potential topics.
Yes. We're going to lead it off.
Yes.
We're going to lead it off with the great noodle robbery of 2018. And
no!
Let me go ahead and tell you, I am not involved
in this.
That's
one slippery noodle.
Yes. Yes, it is. There is a suspect at large who stole nearly $100,000 worth of ramen noodles.
Holy cow.
Yeah, I know. So there was a big rig truck in Fayette County, Georgia, that was parked at a Chevron store, and apparently somebody was really hungry and stole it. Now, the article calls this soup. Is it ramen noodles? That's not a soup, is it? Or
yeah, you're really watering down the definition of soup. You think ramen noodles?
Well done.
Is soup?
Wow. Well done. Also, if you here, true story. If you, I believe because I was 18, I guess when I went, but we went to Japan because my family lives over there. It is served cold.
Really?
Traditional ramen is served cold.
Interesting.
Yes.
I could do I
lived
golf
it for a year in college.
But here's my, again, I have so many questions about this, but the first one that is, clearly this person didn't know that the truck was full of ramen, right? Like, you didn't steal a truck because you were hungry.
One would think.
If you were hungry, wouldn't you steal something else? I'd go to like a swanky farm and steal a bunch of like high-priced lambs or ducks or cows or something like. That'd be more difficult, I assume, but
yeah,
why a truck of ramen?
Here's what I don't understand. So this says that the crime occurred between July 25th and August 1st. So the trailer was parked there for a while, and the owner of the truck says he estimated about $98,000 worth of ramen was on board. I mean, I'm with you, Braden. What are you going to do with that?
Well, is that too much for you, Chase?
Do you guys have to have like a ramen guy move? Like ramen that fell off the back of a truck? Like, you have to have a distributor, like a black market ramen distributor. You need to have to get rid of that. Also, it also tells you why you probably shouldn't eat ramen. They sit at gas stations for over a week at a time.
Mm-hmm. So
don't eat ramen out of a bag.
Let me ask you this, Chase. Have you ever committed noodle theft?
No. No, I buy
and
my
do we
own.
Have any alibi, any whereabouts on where the Hamburglar was last night?
The Hamburglar? Are you
this
talking
was
about
a,
me
this
or
a couple weeks
Hamburglar?
Ago.
A couple weeks ago, I'm sorry.
This is a couple weeks ago.
No.
This is a weird story.
Jeez.
I feel uncomfortable.
This is
right
a
now.
Perfect story for Stick to Sports.
It is.
Tremendous. I just want to know what a guy does with, because wasn't there a story about someone that stole like an entire truckload of condoms? And I'm like, how are you going to get rid of all those? Like, what are you going to go to, like, Rite Aid pharmacies and, like, try to sell
week.
Them back to somebody? Like, what are you going to do? Like, how do you sell ramen to people on Craigslist?
What is your favorite?
$900,000 worth of ramen. I'll give you a discount.
All right, moving on.
Number two.
All right, so you guys will appreciate this because you both like to have a cold beverage every now and then. The Cleveland Browns have installed special beer fridges with Bud Light that will open when they win their first game. So it's a reward.
That is awesome.
It's a reward to Browns fans for putting up with failure for the last few years. Hugh Jackson went and jumped in a lake, but you get beer if they win.
So they've gone 1-31 the last 2 years, and now they decide to put this in with Bud Light, you said?
Yes.
What was it? See, that's my question. I wish there was beer in there. UCF
sponsored by Bud Light.
There you go. Well, and again, listen, free beer is free beer, so I'm not going to complain about free beer. I think it's a great idea. I think it's a lot of fun for the fans to have that in your stadium. Like, hey, you make fun of yourself. It's a little self-deprecating, but hey, you also do something good for them when they win. So all of a sudden, the coolers unlock and everybody gets free beer. That's cool. I think that's a really cool creative idea. There was a bar in Orlando when UCF went 0-12. There was a bar in Orlando that would serve free beer during the games until they won a game. So that kind of stuff goes over very well with your fans.
Yeah, no, it does.
And that bar was packed.
Yep.
And look, now they're national champions. In their own
exactly.
mind.
Exactly.
Number three.
So, Nick, I need you to clarify something. What exactly is a jersey violation? Or what is not a jersey violation, I should say? Because you're always pointing out jersey fouls, whether you're at Publix or a game or golf course or Titans
camp.
Well,
I'll give you one that's not a violation right now. There's a guy walking in right here at St. Thomas Sports Park, and he's got a Gerald McCoy Bucks jersey. Completely acceptable,
but,
good player, still active. But there's no violation at all.
But
there.
He's a grown man in public wearing a jersey.
But he's at a football
training. Why is that a problem?
That's
completely acceptable.
So we've had this discussion. If you are a grown adult male, just male and just adult, and you are not at a game, you should never wear a jersey of any kind.
Okay. Like, if that guy got up this morning and went to Publix and wore that jersey before coming to camp, or wasn't even coming to camp and was just literally going grocery shopping in a Gerald McCoy jersey, it's a violation.
You should not wear a jersey in public unless you're at a sporting event. Now, this, I guess, technically counts if you're coming to watch your team. Also, he's a Bucks fan, so if he's traveled a long distance or he never gets to see his team or whatever because he lives here and he's in Titans territory, I'm going to let this one go because you've made the effort to come down here and watch your team practice. I'm cool with that.
I'm going to ask. Go ahead. Sorry.
Anything goes at the stadium, too. Like, if you want to paint your face or, you know, wear whatever jersey you want to or wear 13 items of the same team, like, I don't care. Whatever. You do whatever you want if you paid money to go to a stadium. But if you are getting up and going to dinner with your girlfriend on a Friday night wearing a professional sports jersey of another human being, that is a complete violation.
Although it is debatable. In 95-degree weather,
it looks terrible.
I don't think you should probably wear a jersey from the standpoint of you're going to be drenched. Like, if you want to be comfortable, you avoid the jersey in 95-degree weather.
The other one that drives me crazy is I see people with autographed jerseys, and they wear them out. And I'm like,
violation.
You're going to ruin it.
You're going to ruin the value.
Don't you want to protect the autograph?
Yes. Agreed.
Number four.
This will probably be the last one. But you guys, I'm sure, at some point in time have invested money in something, hoping that it will grow. Well, Kobe Bryant put $6 million into Body Armor, which is an energy drink. And now, yesterday, the Coca-Cola company has basically bought it. And his 10% stake that cost him $6 million is now worth $200 million.
So the rich get richer.
Yes, basically. So
and I drink Body Armor. I think it's tremendous.
So if you have $6, you get to make $200 million.
Yes,
My
question is:
if you're rich,
what,
you get to make a lot of money in this
what
country.
What can we pull our money in here on Morning Drive and invest in something and get rich?
Topgolf.
Is it too late for that? I think we missed the boat there.
I think we did. What can we invest in?
Well, in this city, it's just dirt. You buy a piece of land.
Yes, property.
You buy a piece of land in the city, just wait 2 years and you'll have
made
some money.
Let's buy a parking lot downtown and charge $20 to park.
No, I don't want to be a part of the problem. I don't want to be a part of the problem.
Let's open up a noodle delivery service.
No,
I want to buy a parking.
I'll eat too much.
You'll cut into our profits.
That's true. Yeah. That's an epidemic. People buying parking lots and then charging exorbitant prices for people to park their cars, especially in a city where we've all voted to not be able to have public transportation. Like, come on. These parking lot people are criminals.
Stick to sports.
They're criminals.
And that'll do it for Stick to Sports. I actually have an idea for an investment that I don't believe has been invented.
Why would you tell anybody if you think this is true?
Well, we're going to talk about it and see if we should all go in.
Oh, off the air?
Yes.
Okay, I don't want to tell anybody.
Yeah, no, this is off the air stuff.
Okay.
Sorry, Nashville.
Behind the scenes. All right. Sorry. But when we come back, who is the worst type of sports fan? We'll get into that next. It's Morning Drive, ESPN 102.5 The Game.